What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Tuesday edition of Unpaved with Sean Salisbury. I'm Adam Sager. You can follow him at Sean Unfiltered, me at Adam G. Sager. We got Triple E behind the scenes. Follow the show at Unpaved on Rumble. We got a ton to talk about today. Talk about that crazy game last night that we both stayed up and watched because we're crazy. We're going to talk about some college football coaching. Sean has a not an issue, but just kind of an when you look at the coaching in college football, it's not up to your standard at the moment. We're just talking overall picture. And then we got the NFL with another stinker last night. And that was the name of the weekend for the NFL, but we'll get to that later. Poll question. We forgot to do the poll question yesterday, and it still did really well. We got, if you were Lane Kiffin, where would you want to coach next season? And your options were Florida, LSU, stay at Ole Miss, or Penn State. And stay at Ole Miss actually won with about 50% of the vote, then LSU, then Florida, then Penn State. So interesting that a lot of people came in and they think he should stay there at Ole Miss and keep building what he's been building there for the last, you know, handful of years and developing them into a top 10 program as they sit now and they're winning big games, just won a big game in Norman. Were you surprised by those results there?
No, I vote the same way. I say stay. Now I understand the temptation to leave, but for me, and good morning, everybody, it's good to be on with you guys. Well, it's afternoon now. It's morning somewhere if you're on the West Coast. So yeah. I personally kind of like to see guys start what they finish. Now, I understand the temptation, but when does not staying where you got it? I mean, I got to believe there's some pride in the coaching part of some. And I think that Lane Kiffin has learned a lot over his coaching career and matured. There's no doubt about that. But I think there comes a point in time that you get more dogged for leaving where you don't win a championship to go find one than you do for staying and struggling to win one. Look at it. Just think about players that leave and chase championships with the big three, LeBron James, case in point, Kevin Durant, case in point. Great players, but there's always a button there when we talk about it. Yeah, great player, but Jordan never had to chase a championship. You hear that. Great player, but yeah, he could have stuck it out in OKC, but he didn't, you know. That's the talk. I'm not done, but that is the narrative that goes around him. It's like even with Marino in a different way. Well, Dan was a great player, best of all times, but he didn't win a championship. We put that on him, but this is different because it's choices when to go and when to stay. Lane Kiffin's going to have that choice.
Yeah.
So while I can't begrudge anybody or getting their wallet for going and chasing something that they want, but I think there is something to be said for we're at Ole Miss. We're a top 10, 12 team, it feels like every year with a chance. So what would – okay, Lane leaves, gets all the five-star recruits, they win a title, at, let's say at Florida. Won't there be – yeah, he did it, but he couldn't do it blank, 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 and blank. You know that's what people will say, even though he may – I think he's a phenomenal coach, and I wouldn't blame him. I did vote stay there and take care of it because right now of those programs, Ole Miss can beat Penn State, Ole Miss can beat Florida, Ole Miss can beat LSU. But I get the history and blue blood part of the other three programs that, quite frankly, Ole Miss doesn't have. So do you love building one and turning yourself into, we did it with this, kind of like some players have done, or do you get it to the point where you say, you know, in all sports, or we had to chase it? With Lane, the temptation floor, I get all the living and all that. Straight football, it's LSU. The history in that, and if you Penn State tradition, maybe them. Florida, I mean, sunshine and all that. Ole Miss probably, if you're going down the checklist, if you football checklist, Ole Miss probably would have finished fourth 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Not only probably, it would have. Well, the fact that we're even hesitating to say stay at Ole Miss is a tribute not only to Lane Kiffin, but their commitment now to winning. So I'm not surprised by that. I think that because of the divide of the three programs we put on there, there's a lot of LSU fans, there's a lot of Florida fans, there's Ole Miss, and there's Lane Kiffin fans, there's Penn State fans. So, hell, it ain't like we put up three hack programs and said, or stay at Ole Miss. So that's a tribute to Ole Miss, the fact that people want him there. So I don't know what he's going to do. The temptation is going to be hard because of the recruiting part of it, sakes. But I would love to see a guy say he's – now, I'm not saying Lane, but loves this program and is going to finish what he started and actually stay there and finish what he started. If he coaches well enough there the next two or three years, another job will come up. But if this is his next dream job, I get why he'd leave. I'd love to see him finish out because right now, money-wise and all that tradition, maybe, Florida's not a better program right now than Ole Miss. I hate to tell him that, but that's a fact.
Let me throw this at you because when we talk about college football, it's kind of different in my opinion because let's look at Nick Saban. Started at Michigan State, tried the NFL thing, finally won at LSU, a powerhouse, then goes to Alabama and turns himself into the greatest coach of all time. All these guys, I mean, can you name a coach that built a program like Ole Miss, who's not a powerhouse? They've never really been the powerhouse. Can you name Dabo maybe at Clemson, built that into a powerhouse from the time he started to when they won the national title?
Chip Kelly at Oregon.
Chip Kelly at Oregon. Okay. So, but then you look at Urban Meyer, had to go to Florida, predominant program, then had to go to Ohio State.
Yeah. Bowling Green, Utah, Florida, Ohio State. Yeah.
So, you know, and you keep going. Harbaugh started at Stanford, went to the NFL, then went to his alma mater at Michigan. But Michigan was already a powerhouse. Now he took them from kind of a downtime to a national championship. But it seems like these coaches that are finally go on and win their national title end up having to be at a powerhouse when it happens. There's not much building. So do you look at it that way and say, if Lane were to say pick LSU or Florida and go there, would you say, okay, I get it, but you're still kind of like, I wish he would have stayed and built it there in Oxford?
Listen, I'm putting myself in Lane's shoes, and I damn right I'm listening to all, I'm considering, hell yeah. Yep. Because when you, and it is different, and you're exactly right, to go and be a powerhouse. When we say powerhouse, Chip, I don't think Chip won a national title, but he had him in the hunt all the time.
He had him there.
That program, you know, Mike Bellotti was good, and Chip Kelly and Mark Helfrich, but Chip Kelly was the bell cow to get recruiting and money spent in the facilities, all that stuff. So, and I'm sure there's more that we're not, you know, that we haven't hit on, but you're right. Thanks. The blue blood or powerhouse program feels like you got to go to one of those. I'll tell you what some of the great equalizer is that changes it from the 80s and 90s and stuff, or in the 70s. And maybe even the early 2000s is the money now, NIL, that you can win a program at Ole Miss or Texas Tech if you're willing to play. Mm-hmm. Hey, I tell you, I mean, you're going to make, put it this way, the quantum leaps are, there's no longer slow move. It's quantum leaps to get good. And it also can be quantum leaps to get bad. Look how quickly Wisconsin went to hell in a handbasket the last 2 years. Look what's happened to them. And they've been a 10 win, I guess you call a team that wins 10 wins every day at powerhouse. And look what a coach has done in Indiana with Cignetti and how he's turned it around. But I think there's a lot of us, even though they're number two, and it's tougher to win a championship now, Segs, because you're going through a playoff instead of you play in the bowl game. Yeah. And the two best teams are there and you win your bowl game and you're the national champion if you're one playing one and two or whatever. So it's tougher now because, well, it's tougher to recruit and keep guys there. But we've added competition in playoffs. You got to run the gamut now against three, four, as we get more good teams to do it. So the great equalizer is that you do not have to be at Southern Cal, at Alabama to win a national championship. But because of money. Now, if you get both, you get Alabama and their NIL has ramped it up. Well, you're going to get great recruits because of the history of Alabama. Hell yeah. Listen, this isn't what I think is going to happen. It's what I would love to see happen for Lane is my point. For me, if you're telling me, Sean, you're in this, you've worked your whole life. And the one thing about Lane, though, that's different, he's had dream jobs. Tennessee ain't a bad job. Yeah, Southern right. Cal ain't a bad job. The Raiders ain't a bad job. And the offensive coordinator at Alabama ain't a bad job. So he's seen some pretty damn good gigs. But all of us, we're lying if we say, no, I wouldn't leave for the money. Of course. And it's not just the money. You want to go and win a national title. And right now, of the four, if we put them on paper and you're just saying, okay, I don't know who they played last year, what their record was 3 years ago, and put those four, Ole Miss, Penn State, Florida, and LSU on a piece of paper. You know who's finishing last for a chance to win a title? Ole Miss is, regardless of who the coach they take, remove the coach, mm-hmm. just the program. Now, Ole Miss deserves more credit for the way, and so does Lane for the way they built it. And it's yep. a great place. So if he bails for $100 million and has a better chance in his mind to go win at Florida, I'm not mad at him. That's why quarterbacks and running backs and wide receivers and linemen are bailing to go get more money because they think they can make more. So it's the way it works in a free enterprise system, and if he's able to. Myself, which would like to say, man, I'd love to him eliminate, and I'd love to see Ole Miss go win it all under Lane Kiffin, where you say, damn, he pulled it off there because they're not a blue blood program.
Right.
But the easier path, even though it may be tougher, he's in the SEC. If he goes to Florida, he stays there. If he goes to LSU, he stays there. That's a brutal conference. But and a Big Ten is not exactly chopped liver at Penn State. But if he were to stay at Ole Miss, don't we even say more like, damn, that's double time because of the way he did it, the way the program was when he got to it. They were still up and down and inconsistent. So love to see it. The temptation is going to be there as it would for all of us. And I don't blame him one bit. And if it was me, I would answer every friggin' phone call. But at some point, when do you get to a job if you're kicking ass, but haven't won a national championship, that you say, I'm not leaving anymore. Yeah. But he's still what's laying in or got to be what now in his late 40s, mid to late 40s, maybe mid 40s. Like I don't even know how old he is now. So there, he hasn't even, quite frankly, reached the prime of his coaching career. He's I will not be shocked if there you go, Phil. Okay, I will not be shocked if he stays, but I sure as hell will. As a matter of fact, if I was betting, I'd say he probably goes. If I was betting on this, a futures with Kalshi, but I just there's a temptation I think for his maturity that says, you know what, I've chased. Now I'm going to go win it right here. But I don't blame him for looking at all three programs. I don't believe Lane Kiffin's a Penn State guy. I believe it's Florida or LSU if he leaves Ole Miss. I think he stays in the same conference.
Yeah. We'll continue to talk about this college football coaching carousel as it continues. We will have more openings, I'm sure, and we're going to have coaches moving around, which will open different jobs, and there's still a lot of layers left to this. But last night, Sean, we talked about the buzz of the World Series yesterday when we were talking to Coach JB and stuff like that. And it just wasn't quite there. And I kind of mentioned it was Friday, Saturday night. You got college football. You know, a lot of people have high school football. So you're just not there to see it. So last night I come home from my boys' football practice and basketball practice, and I turn on the game. So I'm thinking, I think it was when it was 5-4 and then the Dodgers tied it with the home run to make it 5-5 or 5-3, whatever it was. And I'm sitting there thinking like, okay, this will be a good one. This will be a good ending to the game. Thinking, we got maybe another hour and a half left of about four innings. And, I was wrong. It went till almost, 2 o'clock in the morning, 18 innings, 5-5 the entire time, basically, from the time I jumped in, right as the Dodgers tied it. And Freddie Freeman hits the walk-off in Dodger Stadium. Place goes crazy. I mean,
he knows that feeling, doesn't he? He's been there.
Yes, before. He does. One of the very clutch hitter with both the Braves and the Dodgers in his career. And we both stayed up for it. So that's your poll question today. Did you stay up and watch till the 18th inning when Freddie Freeman hit the walk-off? And last I text, Sean, here we sit, almost 82% say they did not stay up. So I think that kind of tells you a little bit about where people feel about the World Series and baseball right now. But you and I, we were up for the 18th inning. We were up for the home run. We were up for the win for the Dodgers to go up 2-1.
No doubt. Epic game last night. One of the best you'll ever see. I don't care who you root for. It was one of the best. Now, if you're on the Toronto side, it was a bummer for you, but you have to appreciate great baseball. And at times it wasn't great baseball. It was a great baseball game. And for me, I had the football game going, which was kind of a snooze fest once the Chiefs got rolling, but we'll expected it. We talked about that. But I saw both TVs on, and so you're watching, and I watch. You know, at first, if you got an eye to both, and you're kind of keeping yourself busy, but the baseball game started going. It rolls into the sixth inning, and you're like, okay. And then there's a sidebar of Ohtani reaches base. What, 9 times in the game? 5 walks, 4 intentional, 4 hits, 2 doubles, 2 home runs, and I'm watching. And I'm thinking, the sidebar, and this game, see, this was one of those you couldn't, if you went in like softly, like, oh, casually watch it. Mm-hmm. As it started to build, you can't, it's like, I remember when the Red Sox were in the 15 or 16 game, when they were in the World Series, it was like 15 or 16 games, and Kimbrel came in to close it out.
Yep.
Say, I couldn't sleep a handful of years ago. And I mean, it got to the point where you're too tired to sleep the way you want to. And I started in the 11th inning, you start to doze, TV's on, you're like, what am I going to miss? You hit the record button just in case, right? But it starts to go on. And I know people said from the 13th inning on or 14th, they were bored. I wasn't, because Klein is a rookie. Dude, The secret MVP of the game last night was Klein the last four innings. Five strikeouts, didn't get touched for the most part. And to keep that game where it was, to give the Dodgers an opportunity to win it. It was dramatic. It was awesome. I didn't find that boring at all. But it had everything you wanted. It had bad base running, and it had good base running. It had some weird fielding and then some great fielding. It had some umpire calls and a guy stealing and then being off the base, maybe a single ends it earlier in the night. It has great throws from right field and Teoscar Hernandez. The Toronto's right fielder made a great throw. Edmund made a couple great throws on relay. I mean, I'm talking, it was phenomenal.
Yeah,
it great was. Pitching. Dude, I'm telling you what now. Sasaki splitter, when he's pumping at 100, that thing drops off the table like it's Niagara Falls.
It's not fair.
It isn't fair. You can't.
It's not fair to hitters.
It's absolutely, when he's going good, it's really, it's impossible to hit.
Right.
Unless you say, well, it starts there. I'm going to go down around the ankles and swing at this damn thing. And especially if he's throwing it for low strikes where it starts out of the strikes. It's just, it was phenomenal. And then you're sitting there and you can't look for any other pitch because you can't hit 100. Okay. So, and then Smoltz was brilliant on the one. He goes, well, I'd elevate in the strike zone on an 0-2 count, like it was in a six or so inning. And the next pitch, he goes, oh, I'd throw 97, 98 up. It's 98 up, swings through it, boom. So it was brilliant. And Joe Davis let it breathe. And everything about the broadcast, it had every home runs, extra base hits. It had everything. Great plays by catchers at home plate. One where, thank goodness, when the play at the first time when catcher sticks the ball down, Smith where he stuck it down on the play at the plate. But the guy was dead to rights, so he blocked the plate with that after, but his initial move was glove first, which saved the review. And then Christian Kirk, who's homering, and he's playing great. And then his throw to second base, dude, to get Ohtani, even though, his pop time and the way he got it out of his glove, phenomenal. I mean, every single thing you saw had drama to the fullest. That's why I love baseball postseason along with hockey. And it wasn't so much your root for the team, it was this thing I can't take my eyes off. It's like people that didn't like baseball were rubbernecking that game last night. Yes. I thought it was phenomenal.
6 hours, 39 minutes was the total. 19 pitchers used, 10 by the Dodgers, 9 by the Blue Jays. 591 pitches thrown. There was 149 plate appearances. Think about that. 149 plate appearances.
And the guy who got on base 9 times last night is pitching tonight.
I thought his game, I mean, his game that we saw earlier in the postseason where he went 3-for-3 with the 3 home runs, he pitched 6 innings, struck out 10, didn't give up a run, only I think gave up 2 hits. I mean, to me, that's the best game I've ever seen. But then to come back and do this, now I get, like, this is, okay, and here's where the people say Barry Bonds. And I am one that I think Barry Bonds is the greatest baseball player of all time. This is what Barry Bonds would do. This is Barry Bonds. 4-for-4 with 2 doubles, 2 home runs, 4 intentional walks, and then he walks later in the game in his last at bat.
And guess what Bonds isn't doing? He ain't pitching tonight.
Right, exactly.
He may throw 7 innings of 3-hit ball and strike out 12 and then come out. And while he's at it, he may homer twice again tonight. His stat line, it looks like I'm watching a video game. You say this, come on, man. You can't be doing this. There's no way. Incredible.
And you're turning to this guy who is the best hitter in baseball right now. Him and Aaron Judge put them together. You're turning to him to put this series away, to put this series at 3-1, still playing in L.A. for game 5, a chance to win the series. And you expect him to go out there and pitch 6 to 7 innings and not give up a run. Maybe he gives up a run or 2, but pitch well enough that the Dodgers can win because they have enough offense. He's incredible, and I just don't think it can be understated that.
Can't miss baseball, dude. Yeah. If it was a can't-miss game, it's can't-miss. You just got to pay. You're fortunate on TV. You're paying for your cable or whatever you're paying.
Right.
Yeah, you're watching – I don't know. I know I take him for granted. It's just like, oh, here, and you just said it. We expect the guy. The truth is the Dodgers say, no, dude, we're pitching somebody else after last night. In truth, arrested guy. It's like, no, he's going to take it. And you will not be shocked if he pitches a gem. I just won't be. And that's what's, it's just fascinating to me. And we've seen a lot of great stuff happen once in a while. He does great stuff all the time. And oh, by the way, remember, he stole 50 bases one year, so he can actually run two at 6'4", about 230. It's just, to me, you're watching, well, it's the 12-year, I've said it before. It's the best player in your little league who's 12, who's bigger than everybody else, and he should be playing high school baseball at 12. Mm-hmm. He starts at shortstop and goes 4-for-4 and two home runs. He takes you to the Little League World Series because he throws 90 on the 55 feet or whatever.
Yeah, right.
You know? And then he pitches the next day and throws 8 no-hitters during his Little League season and no hits in the Little League World Series championship game. That's what Ohtani's doing to major league players, which is phenomenal. And we're going to look tonight and say, oh, what's wrong with Ohtani if he struggles in even a half an inning?
Right.
But my gut tells me that he'll be pumping at 100 and giving you all you can handle if you're the Toronto Blue Jays offense.
Yeah, it's an incredible watch. And I think after last night's game, I think tonight's game, it's Tuesday night. There's no NFL. There might be like a Maxion game or something on college football wise, but this has a chance to be put up monster numbers when it comes to viewers for game 4 of the World Series. Chance to go up 3-1, but it's mainly going to become because Shohei Ohtani's pitching. Like, we can say anything we want. It's because of him.
Well, think about how tired you are. I mean, and those people who are doing more early morning work around the country, whether it's in our business in the radio or whether it's construction or whatever, you're dragging ass this morning.
Yeah.
But you can't wait to get back at it tonight because the tables that I'm sitting here thinking, okay, who's at favor tonight? Tired bats or tired arms? I'm going to say take the over tonight. I just am because I feel like a game that late, even if the opposing pitcher, and I'm not even sure who's throwing tonight for Toronto.
Bieber, I believe.
Oh, yes, it is Bieber. He probably was home in the sheets, right, at some point after eight innings. And Ohtani's playing them all.
Right.
So you think, okay, if some pitcher struggling or the pressure, do you take the over? Or, like I said, Ohtani's capable, and so is Bieber of throwing a gem. But it feels like the bats should be alive and well tonight. That I would think bats are a quicker recovery mentally than and if you're hot, you want to blow out there and play. If you're Mookie Betts, you can't wait to play either, because last night, you know, he was he was 0-for-5 during the regulation.
Yeah, 1-for-8, I think, was his final stat line.
And it wouldn't be shock if he homers twice tonight. Just the hitting's been impressive. And if it gets down to who's going to pitch better, you probably end up taking the Dodgers. The Springer injury does not help. That is a tough loss for Toronto at the top of the order. That is a huge problem because that guy can turn a game around before you can even blink at Dodger Stadium when you open a game. So he can get you thinking differently right off the bat and momentum early. So I can't wait till tonight to see how they respond after all this. But you know what? You can't feel sorry for them. They make a lot of money. This is like doing double time at your construction site, brother. You had to do a double.
Exactly.
You do overnight, go home, grab a cup of coffee, rest 3 hours, and get your ass back at it. And this is the way it works, man. And this is just, they're just going to have to deal with it. So I'm anxious to see it.
We're going to move on to some college football, talk some coaching. But before we do that, Sean, tell me about some Perplexity.
Yeah, it's the Comet web browser, Segs, that you and I have been talking about. I've been talking about on here. It's powered by, you know, obviously AI and Perplexity. It is Comet web browser by Perplexity. And the truth of the matter is, guys, you know what success looks like. And I can tell you what success with this is. It's real because we spend a lot of time on our web browser, right? So Triple E, toggle around. And it's like having a live human being living in your web browser. Sometimes you'll type in, you know, you type into AI, type into your web browser, and what'll happen? You'll say, I want to go eat, you know, at a Mexican restaurant. They'll find you the Mexican restaurants, but that's where it is. They'll give you an answer. What about if they get the answer for you and then they're basically your assistant and going and booking it for you? So let me ask you guys something. How much time do you spend every day on a web browser? How much time do you spend clicking around online, searching and scrolling, typing? Endless tabs. It's a lot, right? How about more efficiency where somebody's working for you? Somebody is working for you, which is an important part of this whole process. And something, if they're doing that, it just makes your life better, right? Well, there's a new AI web browser from Perplexity called Comet. It's completely changing the way we're able to interact with the browser. using Comet feels like having that personal assistant, as I said, living in your web browser that can actually do things for you across the internet. Yes, I said do things, not just give you answers. It'll handle tasks. It'll literally click, type, and search for you and do all the background you need while you're relaxing in the background. They're going to get you stuff done. So it takes it off your hands. It can shop for you, make reservations, a lot more to make your life easier. So Triple E, let's do this. I'm going to tell you, because I want to go to one of my favorite places that I want to go in my life is called Big Cedar Lodge. It's the Big Cedar Lodge in Ozarks. So I want golf reservations on, say, Halloween at Big Cedar Lodge. And then I want reservations for me and Craig, or me and Mike, or all three of us, or all four of us. Add Sags in there. And I want you to put it on a calendar and send them the message that here's the reservations, here's what time golf is, and we have three tee times in the next 3 days, and here's our restaurant reservation. So instead of you getting it and you making it, they're going to tell everybody in there that they got it handled for you. That's who basically Comet is. It can shop for you and do all this for you. So it's pretty cool, right? You go in there, you're using it, it's going to find you. Payne's Valley, one of the great golf courses on the planet, is, and if you saw it on TV, it's one you want to go there. So they're going to make sure all the people in your group know, get you your steakhouse reservations, make sure that everybody knows. So while they're doing work for you, you can find other things to do and get any other DIY stuff you want. It's changing the game. It's changed mine. It'll change yours. It's Perplexity's web browser called Comet. It's pretty cool, right? So download Perplexity's new AI web browser, Comet, that's C-O-M-E-T, by heading to pplx.ai/Sean and let your browser work for you. Plus, right now, when you do that, download Comet, you get a month of Rumble Premium for free, which is a big deal. That's pplx.ai/Sean. Go now and grab back your time online with Comet, the web browser that is not only making a difference in life, but freeing you up for more efficiency. So it's awesome. It sure helped me, for a guy that's not overly technologically savvy. It sure makes me feel like I am now. So check it out now, Perplexity's web browser, Comet. And there you go. Check it out, Segs. I know you have pplx.ai/Sean. And you get a free month of Premium Rumble right there, which is a good gig.
Yes, I have my wife using it. She's a teacher, foods teacher. So she teaches cooking, sewing, all that kinds of stuff, home ec. And I've put her onto it, and she uses it to come up with different things, you know, to just help her along the way.
Time's money, Sigs. You know, exactly. What I'm saying? Give you time to do other things. Family frees it up. And they're pretty accurate, needless to say. Yeah. And I mean, of course they are. And
it just gives you different ideas of how to do stuff. I mean, it just gives you things that you wouldn't normally think of. So, yes, check out Perplexity. Check out
Comet. We all like people doing work for us after we just, you know, it's nice that, always. Hey, man, it's great. No doubt. I love efficiency, and that's what Comet provides. So it's awesome.
All right, Sean, you brought up the fact that you just don't think overall in college football on Saturdays right now, when you look across the slate of games, that there's enough good coaching going on. So kind of expand on that and kind of give me your thoughts of what got you to this feeling.
And Segs, it is a hard business. I'm not telling anybody that they don't know. And it's hard to be consistently good and sustain that regular. It is. Been around. Listen, regardless of what it is, and my respect for the coaching business is through the roof, because so many friends involved in it. I've been coached by so many great coaches. I guess, Segs, and I don't know if it's just we can just put it on the coach. I think the collateral damage and the cumulative effect of where we are in college football. One is we get guys chasing money. As I said yesterday, why is it that we let coaches off the hook, that they get big contracts, and we assume that they're just going to stay focused when a player leaves and goes, gets big money or signs a big extension, and then they don't play well for 2 or 3 years? We know what everybody says. Oh, got fat and happy. Well, don't coaches get a little lackadaisical at times? I'm sure they do, because their life is set the rest of their life. So you got to guard against the human nature to get lazy or to get casual with your thought process. And when I watch Saturday, I look at it and I think too many teams or approaches are casual. What explains some of the decisions a coach makes on fourth down, or decisions a guy makes, or are they teaching? And I know how hard it is. There are a lot of good coaches, but are there enough that you look up and say that when a coach gets hired at all these jobs, Penn State, Florida, UCLA, Oregon State, LSU, that you're going to say, that's the man. Now, I could take you back. If I were to say Andy Reid's getting any NFL job, you're good with it. If I was to say Nick Saban's getting a job. So there are good ones. But I think it's the collateral damage from both sides. Well, it's even more than both sides. It's a big circular hold hands and everybody singing kumbaya. Here's the problem. Is one is the transfer portal is eliminated relationships. It's done. So if you chew out a guy or he's unhappy, he leaves. So if you're a coach, your natural reaction is, well, middle finger, then they want to leave. They're not part of this program. So you're almost, it's like somebody who's been burned in a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, say, you've been married a couple times.
Yeah.
The next time, this person may really love them and be a part of it, but you know what your thought is? I'm tread lightly in the relationship and looking for reasons to know we're going to bail on each other. Exactly. Same thing here. Instead of going in looking for reasons to stay and this is my home and this is where I'm at, I'm a legacy Michigan guy or I love Southern Cal since the Rose Bowl's growing up, even though I didn't have anybody goes there. And now it's switched to, well, if they don't, no big deal. I'm gone. And I find myself in training some quarterbacks that are late bloomers that aren't getting recruited by maybe the big schools they want. I say, go play 1 year at a smaller school and you can leave. And then I got to catch myself and say, well, I don't want to instill it, but it's true.
Right.
That's yes. What this has created. So, and then you're thinking, I'm a coach at these places. I mean, why? Just use Lane Kiffin. And I don't know what Lane's going to do, but look what he's built at Ole Miss. Look how great he is. Look at the regard we hold him in and all the maturity he's gained over the years. And now we're sitting here thinking, okay, if he leaves, then those guys who bought into him are like, damn, what a bummer. Then they got to redo it and say, well, I'll leave. Then he goes to Florida. And in Florida, when you're there, if you're a Florida fan, there's probably a little bit, well, what if he gets really successful and wants to go back to USC or to Ohio State because Ryan Day is going to go be an NFL coach. So, but it has a lot to do with the money now that there are guys, Michigan's quarterback is making more than the offensive coordinator. I want you to think about this for, and you know this. So there's that. So there's a respect factor. And you know the lines are skewed at times with this. So, well, I don't think it's that coaches don't know X's and O's. I do think that the buddy system, I think that sometimes the retread system, I think we give coaches because they're paid a lot that they automatically know how to recruit or they know how to call plays. It isn't. So I think that, and we've also leaned on that we assume when a guy hits 55 or 60, oh, unless he's Nick Saban, he's over the hill, he's old, I need a 25 or 30-year-old. The 30-year-old still is trying to gain experience himself. He may be brilliant, but he's got struggles as we can, I can roll through him. Look at Zach Taylor. Everybody talk. He's struggling without good players right now at Cincinnati, right? And remember the regard here. Look what happens when you don't have your starting – when Darnold's out playing. Well, Kevin O'Connell, now we're back to being just kind of, well, man. So I think it's cumulative, but I don't think in college that there's enough dominant, oh, my gosh, what some of the best coaches are – there's one doing Fox on Saturday. You know, some of that self-inflicted from the NFL. But I don't – I think that we've locked in too much to overpaying at times, but I'm not getting their wallet if you can negotiate it. And why aren't we holding athletic directors just as hostages? If you hire the guy, aren't you tied to him? But we let that fire and fire him and you get to keep your gig. I don't get it. So to me, I think there's less detail to coaching. We're in a 7-on-7 NIL world. And I think a lot of coaches say, if I got the job, I'd have this 80% great. And then there's this 20% of I'm recruiting this guy. He's going to be a backup as a freshman. He's going to leave on me. So we're not invested in this. You know what I'm saying? You're just not. It's like you're renting a home instead of buying it and establishing roots like your family or my parents live in the same house for 25 years, right?
Right.
We don't do that anymore. And it does apply to this. So I think we lose great coaches. I think we got less attention to detail. I think we've made everything softer because you're not allowed to yell and scream. And if you do, and then that guy, then all of a sudden the older coaches who should still be coaching in certain places, they've turned it into a young man's game, so they're not paying the – you know, listen, a coach that coached me who has a championship ring, who should have still been coaching a ways back, he's passed it now because I don't think he wants to anymore, but got to the point when I asked him, I said, why aren't you coaching anymore? They said, oh, they turned it into a young man's game. They try to lowball the guy who's got a championship and bring in the guy who doesn't because we're enamored with, you know, all this offense stuff. And I do think that when you're – spread out, we've lost the commitment to you got to practice physical to play physical. And I think coaches are allowing that to kind of get by. But I know they're limited bodies too, Seg. So there's a lot of reasons. But isn't the direct reflection of coaching the lack of mechanics and poor play we see on the field by players?
Yes.
It's got to be part of it. So if we're seeing poor play by the players, there's buy-in problem on both. There's probably a commitment problem to some. And then there's also this, well, we're in a hurry. I ain't got time to teach the mechanics. So you play sloppy football. So you better have 50 guys that don't play sloppy football as opposed to the 30 that do. And maybe it's at every level, but we've gotten to the point now where there's no full-time buy-in. I believe and feel like every program that guys are renting space instead of buying it, coaches and players, which leads to lack of relationships and trust. You don't know the guy as well. I mean, and if you don't know the guy as well, are you invested in a coach or player if you don't know him as well? So there's a lot to it, Segs, but I see too many mistakes on Saturdays to tell me that we just need to crown every head coach as a great coach. He may have been a great coach at one level, but we got a lot of Power Four schools that aren't being coached by guys that, quite frankly, are ready for that program.
Yeah, I think a few things. I think when you look around the landscape of coaching, all football, and we're just talking football right now. You
From
look
the
at
age
high
school, your kid all the way
yeah,
up.
You look at youth football. You look at college. I think a lot of guys, a lot of coaches, they want and they're kind of expected to show how smart they are, show how good they are at. If they're a defensive mind, show what your defense can do. If you're an offensive mind, show what your offense can do. So we've gotten away from a lot of the where you're tackling drills, where you're doing drills. We're running plays, it feels like, 90% of practice, and then it's a drill, and then it's conditioning. Like, and you know, I've heard that from multiple people at different levels. So I just think that coaching's become harder. And then the other thing is, you mentioned it, the NIL. I think, as you've said in the past, you need to put some sort of salary cap on it at each team in college, I'm talking about. And then the transfer. You have to put in some sort of rule. I don't care who the body is that puts this in, but it's got to be across college football. You get one transfer, one free transfer. After that, if you want to transfer, it goes back to the old rule where you sit out a full season, no matter what. There's no waivers, and get rid of this crap that we have guys playing 8-9 years in college football. You get 6 years. That's it. 6 years of you know, and that's you get one medical red shirt, let's say, too. Like, if you want to play that 6 year, it's got to be a medical reason. So you get your five where you could get redshirted and whatever. But they have to come up with rules to help this because, as you said, it's harder on coaches, and it's harder on coaches to keep those relationships, as you said, and we're also skewing younger with coaches. So now these guys have to feel like, I get this LSU job. Say it's a young guy. I get this LSU job. I want to keep it for my life. I want to be here 40 years like Joe Pa was at Penn State. But I have to keep all these separate relationships because this top quarterback could up and leave.
Let me give you an example. And yeah, no, I haven't seen Segs. I'm one of those guys that I've been around some young coaches that are friggin' good.
Yeah.
But I've also been around young coaches because they've been in a system that they just – people are running around, flying around offensively, that you automatically think, well, he's going to translate to a good head coach, even though the leadership skills in the buyout are there. Well, he can call a play. I mean, they're completing 100 balls, but they're not winning. And there's a difference. There's three levels. There's the assistant coach who knows X's and O's and has his guys mechanically and doing the drills to get his guy ready for pressure. What we don't do enough of is create pressure situations for our players so when it hits on a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, they feel like they've been there before. Because if you haven't, it's just hard. It takes a unique individual to say, I've never been there before. So are we simulating that enough at all programs? And from my visual, we're not. Watch NFL practices, dude. They do it in NFL practice. We play 3 weeks of training camp now, and they're out and they're gone. Yeah. And when it gets to that, there may be three or four live drills. And I know the linemen are banging heads, but then the speed of the other team comes in on the opening day, and you're wondering, oh, damn, my edge rusher didn't get – well, why do you think, dude? Because they blew the whistle when he was in step three, so the quarterback didn't get the shit kicked out of him. And Segs, with this, so I'm young and old. I don't care. I think we discard older coaches too simply, and I think we – pub younger coaches too much because they've had some success. But it's also true. I think some of these younger guys are more open to change than some of the older guys, and rightfully so. So you should push the older guy. This isn't age for me. It's, are you a quality coach that teaches instead of yells and screams all the time? Can you teach and bring along everybody? And can you get them to process quickly so it goes from Friday practice to Saturday game? And another thing with that is I'm just wondering, like I said, I don't get into people's wallet, but when did it get to the point that you're an assistant somewhere? You've never been a head coach, and we pay you $9 million or $8 million to come be a head coach for the first time. You haven't done shit. So, and a guarantee, go, why is it that Jimbo Fisher signs a $100 million contract? Why am I guaranteeing all this kind? Why aren't I doing what we do to players? Well, 3 years guaranteed, but if after 3 years, it's 10% guaranteed or 20%, and then incentivize them to death. Because if you know you're Brian Kelly and this season's going through and you were a tough fit anyway there,
yeah,
or you're James Franklin and you hear it all constantly, isn't there a part of you that you've already checked? It's like the guy who gets the job and still coaches the bowl game. Bitch, you've checked out. You're right. Already recruiting for another school. We got to get you out. There's no reason for you to stay. Go. I'll, even if we get beat, fine. You have checked out and you're gone. So save it. I don't want to hear it because, well, no, he's a pro. Screw that. He's thinking about the guy he's playing against. Can I get the guy to transfer to my program when I leave, or the guy that's playing right tackle for me right now to leave with me when I go take the other gig? So the coaches get lazy or they get sidetracked just like the rest of us do in the world. Yes. And we just seem to think because they're tough guys and they coach that. Did it look to you like Brian Kelly was all in at the end?
No.
Did it look to you like James Franklin was all in? No. You could almost see in a guy's eyes, well, it's churning when they're sitting there doing the national anthem. Well, if we get our ass kicked in this one, I'm still getting all this money. The incentive, well, I don't want to take it, but where's it stop? What if Florida, LSU, and Penn State said, I'm not paying a guy $9 million, $5.5 million. And if nobody else is offering the guy the job, you're used to the Cowboys' philosophy. You ain't getting a job. Come be my head coach. You know what? They've done it. So you get to the point where, like, why am I paying an unproven guy 12? Now, Saban's worth 25.
Right.
Belichick. Does it look to you like Bill's all in right now in North Carolina?
No.
Yeah, I mean, even if he is, it sure doesn't look like it. And judging from some of the comments we hear out of LSU, at Penn State, at North Carolina, is the coach checked out? Players check out. These are grown-ass men, too, that have other interests or have other money interests. So, to me, that it's fallen off in a lot of ways. There's some great coaching. There's some great – but the buy-in, I use it all the time, Segs, but it's got to be buy-in a lot of different ways. And I think, unfortunately, we've made it easy for coaches to say, what are you going to do? Just think about Dabo's speech when he said, I think I've done pretty good football here. He spent 3 minutes explaining why – Clemson, he's really good, and then they should pay him.
Basically what he's done in the past.
Right. But I mean, almost pining and pandering, even though he doesn't need to, he's a good coach. And I'm thinking, he's thinking about this during a season because some media member said the word is that maybe Clemson's unhappy. What?
Yeah.
And you got to – at that point in time, I'm like, so if they're sensitive to that, what happens when they're not playing, performing well, or the coach bails on him, or a player bails on him, or a transfer – So, and I only use Dabo as an example because I love him and he's a damn good football coach. But the fact that you're paying him all that, isn't the money enough for you to stop the sensitivity? And they'll go right to their quarterback and say, don't pay attention to that. You're going to go through tough times. You're going to get booed in your own stadium. You got to push that shit out. Yet the same things Brian Kelly asks you to push out are the same things that when a guy's walking the sideline, he can't wait to meet him on the numbers and chew their ass in public and embarrass him on purpose. On purpose, because, oh, I need you to be under control. I don't mind passion, but don't tell me to be under control when your ass is choking on your own spit because we threw the ball to the other team in one series.
Yeah.
So, and it's not just X's and O's. There's so much that goes being head coaches, shaking hands and kissing babies. You got to do it all. And a lot of them can't handle all the accountability and responsibility. And it shows, but they got theirs. What's Jimbo got to – he wants to get back to prove this isn't the last contract. But what has Jimbo got to – he's got a national title. He's got money in the bank. Other than wanting to prove his naysayers wrong and that he loves football, you love it that much, are you coaching Friday nights? Go coach high school. I don't know if you love it that much, which tells me – and there are guys that, well, I'm not coming back unless I'm a head coach. Then I guess you don't love football that much. Right. Want your players to love it. So it's like when somebody says, like, well, the Kaepernick. Well, I'm only playing – I thought you loved football. Go play in the CFL. Go play somewhere that you can play every day if you love it.
Show it.
It just goes to tell you, follow the money, and that's usually the place where you'll end up with a pot of gold. But it always doesn't mean you're going to get the pot of gold when it comes to a ring on your finger and a trophy.
You just mentioned something that made me think of a question. The fact that you said there is a lot more to being a head coach than just calling plays or just, you know, this. You got to kiss the babies. You got to do the recruiting. You got to do this. You got to figure out this scenario.
You got to raise money for the boosters.
Yes, there's all kinds of shit you have to do as a college head coach. And do you think that's part of the problem we're seeing? A lot of these young guys who are great offensive minds on the football field, but they haven't sat behind somebody that, you know, has done it for 20 years, and they're just sitting watching these guys and they're getting themselves ready. It feels like if you're good on the football field, we don't care. We'll put you in the head coach spot and then hope you figure out the rest as it comes. And then these guys get in these positions and it's like, holy shit, this is a lot. Like, this isn't me just calling plays anymore.
Right, right. Segs, and think about coaches that go to bad places and fix it. That's right. Why you got it. Cignetti's doing a great, and when I say bad places, places that aren't known as a football powerhouse.
Yeah, build on the other side, being
no doubt, you're exactly right. 30-something guy, even a four, I don't care their age, but a younger guy gets an opportunity because he's going haywire. They're scoring everywhere. And then you put him in the seat, and it's like, ooh, this is a little different. Now the athletic director wants to meet with me every week. I just can't study plays. I'm accountable for that guy being late for curfew. That guy was in a bar on Friday because the local police are reporting to you. You got a watchful eye on them. Yep. Then a teammate was late for class, and academically he's possibly ineligible to play, so you got to watch that. This guy's the backup five-star, and you're hearing rumblings that he wants to transfer. All that stuff. Oh, I don't just – no, you actually don't. You actually don't. And I've talked to coaches – one of the biggest hassles for them, yet it's the biggest thing, is getting on a bus and going around and shaking hands, giving a speech 12 nights in a row on your little bus tour in the middle of the summer. They don't just get to coach football. And then that's why when I talk to him, Segs, you know that, and I've talked to you about this before, that think tank with like 20 coordinators that I get invited to go to, and we rent a house and sit on a beach and talk football for 5 straight days. And it's a blast.
Yeah.
But you know what every single one of them to a man said that they miss most when they got the head coaching job? Everybody likes the power and the money. They missed the relationship with their room as a position coach or a coordinator. They hate that. That's the part they hate. Because in essence, when you become the head coach, you're kind of, we don't talk to you that much. You see him in passing, but you're not spending a lot of time.
In the room here.
Once in a while. You see him on game day. It's exact. Coaches giving the talk during Wednesday of the week, and then you're split up. And then the next speech he gives, we'll meet on Friday as a team. So you just don't. So we've these relationships. You start to forge them, and then all of a sudden the guy transfers. So you lose that, and you got to build relationships, and you got to build relationships with the guy you always recruited. Used to be you recruit the guy you played, and if he transferred because he got hurt, you got it. But you didn't have to worry about exodus by 10, 12, 15 players. So it's a constant, and it's no longer just coaching football, which goes back to the leadership skills of, I know a million guys that can call X and O's. I know 100 guys that are great leaders. Big difference. And so for me, if somebody said, Sean, why don't you be the head coach? I can lead. You know what I'd do? I'd hire the greatest assistants in the world and actually take less and give them more. Take less. And you say, well, Sean Shrewd. But I would. You know why? Because you know how you're going to sustain the job? Great recruiters and great assistant coaches who coach your players. And for an extra million to be split 8 different ways, I'm okay with that considering, because you'll continue to get – that's why I say it. If everybody wins, you continue to get a new contract. Yeah. So I just – to me, the leadership and the attention to detail has gotten skewed, and the, oh, my gosh, they just threw for 400 3 games in a row. That guy's the head coach. And you get him in a room, and he can go up there. For instance, let me give you Joe Brady. You know I love Joe Brady, what he did with Burrow. He had a lesser quarterback at Carolina, and with Matt Rule, got a little tougher. He got Josh Allen. And I think Joe Brady is a phenomenal coach. There's talk he's going to go to Penn State. He looks like a Penn State guy, right? The redheaded East Coast Joe. He's up in Buffalo. I can see it. But are you sure? Do we know? And they're going to pay him what, $9 million? If they hire him, they'll pay him $8-9 million a year. Now, I know the thought is, well, if we miss out on him, don't pay him. Well, somebody else. An old school $3 million would have got Joe Brady to coach Penn State because it's frigging Penn State. But it's no longer the, oh, it's Penn State. It's Penn State's offering me $6 million. UCLA's offering me $9 million. Let me go to UCLA, even though I got no shot to win a title right now. You get my point? So, and Joe may be a great head coach, but you're going to take a flyer on him because he's a great offensive coach. We saw it with Cliff Kingsbury, who's now a hot commodity again after what he did with Jaden Daniels, right? Now, got to get Jaden back. You see, it's a lot. There's a lot more difficult when you don't have that guy back. Yep. So There's no doubt. So there's so many things, but it's the attention to detail. And I think we lose sight of the fact that because a guy can go up on the board and sell you on why he should be the head coach, doesn't mean a hill of beans if he doesn't know on a Friday night how to go get a recruit, if he doesn't shake the $10 million booster guy's hands and handle NIL. It is, you got to be a CEO and you better have assistants you can trust. Because if you don't, eventually they'll be gone or you will be gone because they're not invested in you. And you better get buy-in from your assistants as well.
Yeah, and the best OCs, particularly the younger ones, the OCs, DCs that become head coaches, when you look at their staff, there's always a couple ex-head coaches. Even if they were bad, even if they had no success as a head coach, the fact that they've been through it,
but,
that they're
but sitting... But they were good coaches to get to be a head coach. Say, exactly.
So, right. And they've been through it, so they know... Okay, here's what I would do in this situation. Here's what I would do in this situation.
All you got to do, and you're 100% correct, is go look at Saban's history.
Yeah.
Butch Jones gets fired. I want to bring him on as an analyst. Alex Grinch gets fired. Bring him on as an analyst. Hoarding guys that have a world of experience and sticking them in one room. Why wouldn't you? Yes. So if you're that, hoard them all. And then all of a sudden, and you know, then every now and then you got a cage. You got Ed Orgeron, who's been there, Burrow's there. And what do? You go hire, God rest his soul, my former coach, John Robinson. Mm-hmm. To handle, Robinson was so good. I tell people, what was Coach Robinson's strength? The ability to be a player's coach. And I don't like that term because it seems like you take it. When you hear that, it's take advantage. He's too nice, yeah. Right? Coach Robinson had the best I've ever been around at any level, at any time, or watched from a distance or been up close at being able to make you feel great, even though you know you're in competition, and to be a player's guy that you felt like you could walk into his room, but when you left the room, you knew that you were going in to see your coach, not your buddy. It's hard to find that dynamic, Segs, where, hey, buddy, I knew Coach Robinson loved me like family, but I also knew that if he had to replace me, he would have no problem doing it because he needed to do what was best for the team. And there's that, but yet, even though you know that he'd replace you if you weren't doing what's best for the team, you still loved him and sold out for him because you run through a wall. Yeah. And I'm just telling you, you ask anybody that played under Coach Robinson, and how you want to know how you find out about how a coach, how you feel about a coach, talk to the guy who never plays. Go talk to the backup tackle, to the third string quarterback, and say, what was he like? And I have yet to hear a guy in my career that I played with or that played at SC under Coach Robinson say, guy was a tool. Got players hated him. Nobody respected him ever. Now, you may find one, but I'm telling you, that's like finding a speck of sand on a beach in California. Yeah. It was hard. Why? It's easy when you're the guy winning high. Marcus Allen loving him. That's his guy. But what about the third string back that still loved J-Rob, that loved Coach Robinson? So to me, he had this unique ability. And what did Ed Orgeron do, who's an SC, had been at SC? Yep. He brought Coach Robinson in to be the organizer, and nobody had practice. We had a ton of fun, but practice was organized with a smile on his face, drill to drill to drill. We did it every day. And Coach Orgeron, you know, he's everywhere, bouncing off. Yeah. You needed a guy to have that detail, and Coach Robinson was that guy, and look what happened. I'm just telling you, all the stuff happened, the perfect storm for LSU, the hidden gem of that whole thing was Coach Robinson behind the scenes with Ed Orgeron. And that was a big part of it as well. So – that we don't have enough of, and you're right. And you can't just load up with old guys, and you can't just load up with young guys. You got to have guys that have been kicked in the teeth, because at 32 years old, you ain't been kicked in any teeth, dude. Right. You ain't done shit yet, even though you're a head coach. What's your biggest kick in the teeth? You had to go coach high school football in Texas, and now all of a sudden you're the coordinator at Texas Tech, and then you're the head coach at Baylor. Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's not getting kicked in the teeth. Go to 14 different jobs in 16 different years to be a head coach, then come see me. Different story. But the coaching profession, while difficult, we also have put, in my opinion, there are unqualified coaches to coach at certain programs, and we've seen it.
Yes, 100%. This conversation won't end because, as I said earlier, this coaching carousel thing is just getting started. We've got these 12 openings that we have right now. We're going to get more, and then some of these coaches are going to be leaving schools to go to one of these programs, which opens another job. And as Coach JB said yesterday, as you said in the past few weeks, you can't remember a season like this one where there's so many openings and it's not November yet. It's not even November yet. We still have teams that aren't playing good, like a Wisconsin, that We'll probably move on from Luke Fickell.
Think about your thoughts on Kalen DeBoer and Alabama 7 weeks ago.
Yes.
Think about it. Think about your thoughts on LSU and Brian Kelly and Doug and Garrett Nussmeier's team 7 weeks ago.
Yep.
Think about 7 weeks ago how you felt about Dabo and Clemson. Think about 7 weeks ago how you felt about Indiana. Okay, last year. Now tell me how you feel. Think about how you felt about Billy Napier after they beat Texas. Whoa, yep. Maybe. Billy is now collecting his check without coaching. Think about how you felt in August about Penn State. Ooh, top pick in the draft. Drew Aller, yep. Who's not worthy. He just like we said, we thought he was a little in over his head when, as far as the ranking goes. Good player, good kid. And then, James Franklin, this is his year. It's his year to get fired. Right. So point is, it shifts on a dime, and you can go from being the shiniest star on the planet to a guy that you're scrambling around thinking. But it also creeps into you getting paid all that money. There's always, that's okay, I'm going to be fine mentality. Yeah. I like coaches who coach on the edge and think, I don't care what I'm doing. I'm coaching as if this is the last job I'm ever going to have, even if it's not. And yes. I don't think we see enough of that. I think we've made it easy for people to leave campus, for players not to buy in, and I think we've made it easy for coaches to go. And to me, I don't understand why it's the greatest gig ever that you get the guaranteed money 4 years in. If you just decide not to take a job, you get every ounce of your money. There's got to be, if I'm a team saying, no, here's, we're not doing that anymore. Here's what you get for the first 3 years. And on year four, it's the only 30% of it's guaranteed. And then the rest of it's not. And then they say, well, I'm not coming there. Okay, no problem. Somebody else is going to have to hire you. There's always going to be another guy, Segs, and there is, unless it's Saban. Not going to be another Saban. But there's always another guy who can go 8-4 or 9-3 at any
school.
That's why it just is.
I'm so interested to see what happens this coaching cycle, because Indiana gave Cignetti the 92.7 million fully guaranteed.
At a non-blue blood program.
At a non-blue
it's not blood. Like you did it. It's not like you did it at, you know, Joe Paterno or Bobby right. Bowden in their prime, or John Robinson or Nick Saban. Okay, he's won two national titles in a row. Pete Carroll when he was at SC. Okay, yeah. Okay. We're talking about a guy who I think we all love. Right, who we all love. But we're sitting here really in year two of being really good. You've decided that this is your guy forever. And if he goes 2 years of playing just as bad as he is good now, you know how that started? It'll be like, oh, okay, now look. Well, maybe it'll never happen. Maybe he'll validate all of it, and that'd be great because I love the guy. But that's awfully risky on the team's part. If you're Cignetti, you're like, shit. Now, I think it'll drive him because I feel like that's his personality. But if you start to go to hell in a handbasket, it's like, what are they going to do? They can't take my scholarship. If they do, my scholarship's still full. It's a hard dynamic, and we've catered to all of it instead of just, dude, you're here for the duration, and you're doing it $5 million, not $12 million.
Simple. Indiana is either going to look really smart because they got in early on the trend. They started the trend of the fully guaranteed coaching contract, or they're going to look really, really dumb, because if all these other schools come in and they're just kind of doing the normal contracts, where even if it's just the normal where you get paid 60% is your buyout, and then it goes down each year. I mean, Indiana's going to look dumb there. And then if Cignetti starts losing again and Indiana kind of goes back to just, 6-6, 4-8, 5-7, whatever, then they look dumb from that standpoint as well. So,
Six, who are the top five teams in college football right now? Who are the top five teams in the country right now?
Ohio State.
Okay, stop. Ryan Day, experienced or not experienced? Very experienced, right? And a national champion. There's one.
Got to go Indiana. I mean, they're ranked 2
in
the country.
Okay, Cignetti, although he doesn't have a championship.
A lot of experience.
At this level, a ton of experience being coached by a bunch of people, being on staff with a bunch of different guys, coaching at every level and earning his job at Indiana, because he didn't get LSU's job, and maybe somebody would have offered it to him had he not signed it with Indiana. But a ton of experience, and he's not 25. I'm not saying 25-year-olds can't coach. There's two with a world of experience. Number three?
Texas A&M.
Elko's been a head coach at other places. Duke. And he's a coordinator.
He's gone through everything building up to his. He didn't just get a job handed to him.
That's exactly right. And look how they're playing. A little bit of experience there. Who's four?
Alabama. I'll just throw out there. I think they're one of the top five teams.
All right, okay. Kalen DeBoer did a great job at University of Washington. Struggled, but you're the guy right after the guy. And now he's got his team playing top five football in the country right now. So he's one that you say, okay, younger guy, but not 30-something. And like I said, when I say this, people say, what, 30-somethings can't coach? I don't mean that at all. I'm just saying a little bit of experience with the process helps that you didn't go from one job and then all of a sudden you're the head coach at a college and you're 29 or 30 years old and you've had one gig. Okay, now who's five?
I'd probably say Oregon.
Dan Lanning's been doing it for a minute. And who wasn't he on Nick Saban's staff at one point?
Yes.
Was he with Kirby Smart?
Yes, I want to say he was.
So, and some of these other guys that are young may have too, but I'm talking about they've gone through steps. And, you know, like I said, and some, you get a guy like Sean McVay, you're saying, I don't care how young he is, the guy just fit. I'll never forget when I had a couple of Rams buddies of mine, a couple of Hall of Famers. I'd asked them when Sean McVay got to the Rams, I said, because he called all the, he had a meeting with a lot of former Rams to invite him in and tell him what he was going to do with the program. Because guys wanted Sean McVay, is he ready for this, right? And I could tell you two Hall of Famers that came out of that meeting, and I talked to them, and they said, as impressive as any presentation I've ever seen. But guess where Sean McVay's been his whole life? His family members when he was blowing his nose around football. And I'm sure that's a lot of guys. So it's not young, it's not old, it's a mix, but it also is the buy-in of you've got to understand that in college, that's why college to me is tougher than the NFL, because you got to recruit. They're shaking hands and kissing babies. There's so much more to just being, and you can only get so much time a day with the kids because of the NCAA rules. So, which falls back on the coach, but also the development of players is not been, we're not getting them to college as prepared as they should be. And it's going on in high school as well.
Yep. We'll continue this conversation as we move along throughout the rest of this college football season. And we see where, you know, rumors will start to pop up. We're already hearing certain rumors. Marcus Freeman has turned down any kind of talk from Penn State and Florida. So he seems to be staying at Notre Dame, which I don't think shocks anybody. I think he's built for Notre Dame. It feels like the only job he's leaving for is Ohio State, you know, his alma mater. I feel like kind of that Dabo Sweeney type thing when Dabo was going really good early on.
And the only way Ryan Day leaves that gig, and I don't even think he should, is if he wants the ego to go coach an NFL, be an NFL head coach. Other than that, dude, you're going to fall out of bed and win 9 or 10 games every year with the players you get. Why would you want to leave it? But, you know, you can't tell that to a guy who wants to prove it at both levels. That happens. Right. But the Pete Carrolls and Jimmy Johnsons don't happen very often, segs where you dominate both in certain parts of your career.
Oh, yeah. We've seen plenty of guys, including Nick Saban, try, and it didn't work out. We saw Urban Meyer try. It failed miserably in Jacksonville.
And it's failing right now for Bill, too, in North Carolina so far.
Yes, and that's going the opposite way. So
that's what I'm saying, from one to the other.
Right. It's a very weird dynamic when you move from one level to the other. Tomorrow, we'll talk about Game 4 of the World Series. How did Ohtani pitch? Did he lead them to on the brink of another World Series and kind of crushing the Toronto fans again after his big performance in Game 3? Does he come out in Game 4 and pitch and probably hit two home runs? Because it's Shohei. It's what he does.
Can't wait to see it, Segs. And by the way, Isaiah, just real quick on one of your football questions, what do I think about Green Bay? I think Green Bay, just like I thought at the beginning of the season, dangerous, upgraded on defense with Micah Parsons, and Jordan Love's taking another step. Now, they are in that division's going to be tough. That's going to be battle-tested through it. And the NFC, to me, is deeper. But if you're talking about the Rams, the Packers, the teams, Philadelphia – are they in that little pod of conversation? You're damn right they are. There is absolutely no question about it. And the consistency of Love. But they just got to continue to make big plays, and the defense got to continue to get off the field, and they'll be just fine. Thank you.
And the question I want to ask you tomorrow, Sean, is the NFL. I think I just counted. I think it was 12 of the 13 games from Thursday night to last night, Monday Night Football, were double-digit wins. We only had one game. And that was that crazy comeback by the Jets, who were down by double-digit points and came back and won by 1 point. what's going on in the NFL? So start thinking about this for tomorrow. What's going on in the NFL that we are having so many blowouts, and then it just kind of all came together this weekend that, again, 12 out of 13 games, and I think it was 9 out of those 12 games that were double digits were 14 or more points. So 2 touchdown wins. I mean, it's just insane.
The NFL looks like August games or like the third game of the college football season when you're scheduling somebody you're supposed to beat by 40, whatever that is.
We're looking don't like say that. Slippery Rock.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I give Slippery Rock nothing but respect. It is the, as far as the consistency of it, we'll talk why tomorrow. I'll just say this. It is the worst 8 weeks overall hold. There's been some spectacular performances, but overall, I can't remember being 8 weeks in and saying, I don't have a damn clue who's winning the Super Bowl, because I don't think there's, even with Kansas City playing well, I still don't think there's a great team. There are far more average to bad teams than there are good teams at the top week to week. That's the way I feel.
And then I also want to ask you tomorrow, we'll both come up with ours. Who's your NFL MVP? I heard you and Coach JB talk about it. I was going to bring it up, but we got into a big conversation tomorrow. Who is your NFL MVP? I think there's a handful of guys to choose from. It'll be interesting to see if we land on the same player or we're completely different when it comes to the MVP so far.
I can't wait. I know, put it this way, it's a quarterback award, but a quarterback may not be leading it right now.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think we're leaning the same direction there. Thanks to Triple E. Thanks to Laura, as always, behind the scenes. And we will be back tomorrow. Will the Dodgers be one win away? That's our Kalshi prediction of the day, Sean. Dodgers -1.5 with an over-under at 8.5. Which way you lean?
Give me the over for the Kalshi futures pick. Give me the over. A lot of tired, but you may run into a couple. Probably going to use even, and then maybe not as many pitchers, but I think you're going to see more of them. Give me the over. This is like a 10, this is like a 6-5 type game tonight. I would take the one run. Give me the Dodgers to go up 3-1 and give me the over on this 9 or 10 runs in a game tonight.
Give me the Dodgers -1.5. I think Shohei will come out, put his foot down in this offense. You know, with the Jays reeling after that 18-inning loss, I think this is where they kind of put their foot on the throat and just take over the series. And I see it ending. I was always 6 games. And Coach JB said yesterday he had it in 5. I'm starting to lean more just with the way the game ended last night. It just feels like Toronto gave everything. Now, I could be 100% wrong. We get on here tomorrow. We're like, wow, here come the Blue Jays.
I'm still sticking with 6 eggs, and you go on to Kalshi, guys, and you're going to see how it's trending and how it goes. It's a great place to get some futures picks in. It's legal in all 50 states. Jump all over it. To me, it's one of the great finds we got going on in the legal gambling world, okay? Kalshi does it. And the futures picks, that's the place to be. Go get your predictions in, and you can predict damn – they got a prediction for damn near
today, everything. Like, you can predict how many hurricanes there's going to be this season, hurricane season. Like, over, under, I think it was 4. I mean, it's insane.
I would imagine November 4th with these primaries, I imagine you can pick the winners.
There's a ton of political stuff.
No doubt. Yes. No doubt. So it's pretty awesome. I think it's phenomenal. I agree.
Yeah, just if you like to bet, and maybe, you know, bet responsibly, Kalshi, because you can go so many different ways throwing money at different things that you're just, your head will be spinning by the time you get done there.
It's so phenomenal, and it's easy to get. It's easy to, you know, getting through it, and it'll tell you how everybody's feeling, and I think you'll love it. So give me the over tonight. I think the Dodgers win, but give me the over. But I still think Toronto's going to get another one, and we're going 6-6.
I like it. We will be back tomorrow at noon Central, 1 Eastern. We're going to be talking NFL. We're going to be talking World Series and anything else that hits tonight. I want to also talk about Victor Wembanyama.
Think he's any good this year?
That dude is ridiculous. They say he's 7-7 now. They say he's 7-7.
He's playing at 7-7 and got handling moves like he's about 6-2, dude. I mean, the dude's doing everything.
We'll talk more about him tomorrow.
Yeah, if you're and another thing, the Denver Nuggets know how to score. So if you if you're picking the Nuggets and you get a futures, are they going to score more than 125 tonight? Like, you might as well lean on that, because everything points, but they're scoring at a rapid pace.
Predict yes there, Kyle.
No question.
We'll be back tomorrow, noon Central, 1 Eastern. Peace, guys.